everybody. Welcome to Children's Health Defence Roundtable. It's the 10th of February, 2023. And we have an all-star lineup today with Dr. Nass, Dr. Hooker, and Dr. Mumpa. And I'm so honoured to have Dr. Mike Yeadon here with us today. This show is called Toxic by Design. It is the words that I actually took out for straight from Dr. Mike Yeadon's mouth himself. Could you tell us why you're thinking that? But most importantly, how did we get to where we are today? I mean, it's incredible in the last 3 years, the rush and speed of how we are where we are.
Yes, no, thank you very much for having me back. Yes, it feels like we're going faster and faster rather than, you'd think we'd get used to the sort of speed of transformation, but if anything, it's accelerating. We were just talking about a real change where I'm living. the by design bit. So I used to work, when I was at Pfizer, I headed their allergy and respiratory discovery research units, and I used to work very closely with medicinal chemists. They're wonderful people, medicinal chemists. They have to come into work and make a molecule that's never existed in the whole of the history of the universe, because you can't patent something that's not novel. And I appreciate what they do. Anyway, when you're inventing molecules, you have to think about what's the application and the kind of characteristics you need for a molecule that you're going to eat, like a tablet or a capsule. It's quite different from the characteristics of a molecule that you're going to wipe on your skin as a cream or ointment. And similarly, they're different if you're going to inhale them. And we started thinking very hard about what were the characteristics of inhaled drugs that made them good inhaled drugs, and what characteristics made them not very good. And we came up with some rules that eventually we caught, one of the chemists actually came up with a phrase, inhaled by design. It was an ideal molecule that would work, be a low dose, very potent, absorb slowly, remove quickly from the blood when it left the lung, all that sort of stuff, very stable as a ground up micronized powder. And so those characteristics, not patentable, but it was like a trade name, inhaled by design. So when I was looking at these vaccines in 2020, I thought that the person who's put this structure, this design on a piece of paper intended them to cause harm. I'm convinced it's not an accident what has happened. They chose features of the molecule that would, for example, accumulate in the ovaries and the spleen, that would leave the site of injection, that would cause expression of a foreign protein all around your body in an uncontrolled way. So it could be a lot or a little, and for a long time or a short time. And all of these features sound to me like toxicity built into the molecule, hence toxic by design. It's not an accident what's happened at all. That's what I think.
And that, you know, to me, looking at the possibilities for designing a vaccine, and then introducing a genetic therapy that has been untested in this platform, and then giving it to billions and billions of people, essentially the entire world population, makes sense. I wanted to go to toxic by design. Mm. What type of smoking guns, if they are out there, do we have any documents that would belie the fact that these have enhanced toxicity and that toxicity was intentional?
Well, I think I do. And so it's a good question, although it's not likely that the people who've done this are going to leave many traces, right, if they've got any sense. But right, I'll point to a few things. I would say the first one is what you just said. It's reckless beyond any possible countenance that you would take a novel technology, so that the authorities have said, oh, well, we've been working with these mRNA molecules for decades, they're not new. No, these have not been used in a mass population ever, so we don't know what the consequences are. Say you had lethality in 1 in 1,000 people. Well, if you've only dosed 300 people, you wouldn't have a clue, would you? Well, that was roughly the situation they were in, but I was fairly convinced, for all sorts of other reasons, like lying about the virus and the medical countermeasures, which they're still doing, that they weren't, these were not behaving in an honest and honorable way. So why would I think the next thing they were going to bring along was going to be straightforward? So that colored my view. But straightforwardly, yeah, you don't blaze away at the human population with a novel technology which you've got no experience without even doing it in a staged fashion, where it's quite reasonable to be concerned. They have been worked on in the labs for a long time, and that's because they do have potential to be harmful. They're also difficult to manufacture. They're difficult to keep them stable. You know, they tend to spontaneously come apart. We don't know how to get them inside cells in a controlled way. So the new technology itself was that massive red flag for me. They didn't have to do that. And I don't buy the reasons they gave, which is, oh, it's easier to manufacture. Well, they've proven they're not able to consistently manufacture it anyway. So that tells you that was not the reason. And there isn't another ground for using a novel technology. But here's the next one. They have used, at least the mRNA products, both use lipid nanoparticles. I've found, and I can send you, Brian, the reference of a peer-reviewed journal article from 2012, whose title is something like lipid nanoparticles and unappreciated human fertility risk, That's the actual title of the paper. So it's not like people who worked in formulation design in Big Pharma didn't know that lipid nanoparticles accumulate in the reproductive organs of animals. They did know that. It actually says that in the introduction. But that's the title of the paper. And yet, Moderna and Pfizer chose those formulation methods with that as that background as a title. I think that's pretty bad. If I was presenting this to a judge, I would say, look, they knew this would not be a good idea. So that's another thing. They chose a kind of formulation, not only that would mean it would leave the injection site like an uncontrolled missile. What happens with the lipid nanoparticles? It's not quite accurate what I'm going to say, but it makes the little blobs, they're almost invisible because they're cloaked in the same kind of stuff that is the outer membrane of all of your cells. So you don't see it very easily. And they certainly, in terms of an absorption characteristic, they leave the site of injection easily because of that. But the main concern I have is that, and this isn't my original idea, many of us have focused on the concern that all four companies, so let me just take a step back, it was old style vaccines, we would grow a culture of the pathogen and kill it chemically or with heat, grind it up, mix it up with something and inject it. And that would allow, theoretically, our body would then see some of this dead organism and learn how to handle it and retain an immune memory. So you'd be alert and ready to fight quickly if you should see the live organism or one like it. The alleged virus whose existence I'm afraid I've started to doubt very significantly. The sequence is there, it was lodged there, I think, in China and other places. But the companies chose to encode a particular part of the virus, about a sixth or a seventh of it. So just that gives the listener an idea of like, I don't know, less than one finger on the hand's worth of the virus. They all chose the same part, the so-called spike protein, the bit that sticks out the surface on the TV cartoons, despite the fact that there is an ample literature that says that these sort of little grappling hook bits that stick out of the outside of pathogens can be dangerous. And so the chances that they all chose the same part with the fact that when you express that in the body, when your body temporarily becomes a virus component manufacturing site and starts making the very part which in the past has been attributed to have toxicity, that struck me as not only a really bad choice. No one, if I was leading a brainstorming meeting on the design of one of these things, if we came up with that as our solution, I would consider that I'd failed as a leader. And the idea that all four companies did it, I'm afraid, it's not possible. They colluded. It's the wrong choice, and they all did the same thing. The concern, just to be clear, the concern is we've got an unguided missile that's going to guide this mRNA, this genetic code, around your body, and it could land anywhere. could land in your heart, your ovaries, your testes, your brain. And if it's taken up into those cells of those organs and started doing what the design says, which is make me a copy of whatever this genetic code codes for, various bits of your body will start turning into a virus spike protein manufacturing site. Well, if that spike is toxic, you should expect some toxicity in every one of those, any or all of those organs in which it lands. And I could predict that. It's a sort of toxicological principle. But that's not even the worst. My good friend, Professor Sukharit Bhakti, is a Thai German guy who was a longtime chair of medical microbiology in Mainz University, Germany. And he's now assisting the Thai royal family because there's a tragedy where their daughter, I think, is in a coma in hospital after administration of one of these vaccines. He pointed out to me that, Mike, it actually doesn't matter what is encoded. It could be worse if you have a virus spike protein. But he said the key, and I knew this, that the key is that it's not you. It's not human. It's a foreign protein. Now, guess what happens, folks, when your body starts to manufacture, sticking out of the surface of fragments of this non-self thing. It's not Mike. My immune system goes mad. It recognizes that I'm infected effectively. Effectively, it thinks I've been taken over by a pathogen. And my immune system is trained to home into those tissues, every tissue that's doing that, and kill it. That's what your immune system does. It has to maintain the inside of you should be you. And if anything that's not self is in there, it kills it. And so every cell that would get infected, there would be an expected autoimmune attack. So it's neo-autoimmunity. And Sukharit points out that any foreign protein encoded in that way, so it wouldn't matter if it was a different part of the spike protein. It's the wrong design. I just don't think it's capable of yielding a predictable and safe product. And then the final denouement, I think it is, the thing that's really keeping me awake at night. I've heard various announcements that the authorities are so pleased with the performance of these mRNA products that they're going to convert all the old vaccines, including the ones on the chartered schedule, to mRNA format. Well, if they do that, and if what I've just said is true, every time one of your children is injected, they're going to be given something that will cause their body to express a non-self protein, and their immune system will attack the tissue that's expressing it. If you do, and my government and yours has agreed business terms with Moderna and Pfizer to acquire, wait for it, and enough vaccines for 10 additional injections per man, woman, child, and baby. So if I'm even faintly right, they intend, why else buy them, to inject each of us 10 times over. I think it will kill everybody. I can't see any reason to do it. And that is I feel like I'm living in a bad sci-fi film. So it's a terrible plot. It's a really boring plot, by the way, Bill. It really is. But that is my concern. Unless someone can refute what I've said, you know, not just doubt it a bit, you need to tell me why it's completely wrong and it will not cause the immune system to attack the tissues expressing it. Because unless I'm wrong, what's going to happen is that people will become progressively sicker and sicker until I think billions of people will die. That's what I think they can do.
This is another short piece by Mike Eden. And it's from a podcast. It's only a minute and a half. I shall just play it and let him say what he needs to say.
The powers that be, I'll call them the perpetrators, the people running this global crime. It is a global crime to take over all of humanity. Yeah. What they've done is they pretended that there was a serious new respiratory viral health threat. Okay, that's what they did, this virus in Wuhan. In my opinion, there never was an exaggerated, there was never any new health threat whatsoever. Partly the beauty of this, it can't go wrong because there's no moving parts. There's literally, the only moving part is the PCR test. So the initial thing, an exaggerated health threat. Now, some people believe there's a new virus, but if so, it's not any more serious than influenza, not really, because flu vanished at the same time by sheer coincidence. Personally, I actually have come to the conclusion, and I will credit Andrew Cowan and his colleagues. I had a really good chat with those guys early in 2020, and it bothered me. I realized over time I could no longer maintain my understanding of respiratory viruses as I thought I knew them. And then I learned a new bit of information recently, and it collapsed the possibility that respiratory viruses as described exist at all. They don't. People do get ill. People are ill. People had exactly the same illnesses, Peter and your listeners, exactly the same illnesses as before that horrible heathen said viruses don't exist. They still have, quotes, colds and, quotes, flu. I think we don't know what causes them, and they're not respiratory viruses.
All right. The next piece I want to share with people is from Majid Nawaz's show, Radical. And it's part of an interview with Dr. Mike Yeadon, who's a former Pfizer vice president in charge of something, respiratory diseases or something like that. So he's got relevant experience in something that is appropriate for the topic. They're talking about midazolam and morphine. So this is yet again, the midazolam story isn't going away. John Campbell's been talking about it. Now Majid Nawaz has got his head into it. Neither of those two people will allow it to go away. Neither of them. Mike Yeadon won't allow it to go away. So it's a story that will break in the mainstream media in maybe a year or two's time. But at the moment, it's bubbling under in the alternative media. It normally takes a year or two before things start to break through, if we take the COVID example. But here's the clip. It's only a minute and a half, this clip, but I think it's quite an important one.
Am I hearing you correctly that your conclusion, as somebody whose PhD focused on morphine, yeah, as somebody who was the head of respiratory illnesses for Pfizer globally, and therefore has that respiratory expertise,
yeah,
having looked at Stuart Wilkie's evidence on midazolam, that your personal conclusion is that the state deliberately put people on midazolam and morphine for the purposes of terminating their lives?
Yes, there's no question. They use doses. Well, neither of those drugs would ever be appropriate in an open airway breathing patient. So if someone arrives and they're able to breathe, even if they're breathless, you would not repress their respiration, which midazolam and morphine would do. And also, per many bits of information that Stuart Wilkie was able to show us, the doses that were used were between 3 and 5 times the recommended initial starting doses. So I wrote them down and I went back to look at my clinical pharmacology books. Indeed, those are doses that you would expect would lead to a fading away of people, certainly if they were given repeatedly day after day. So I personally am convinced that the excess deaths in care homes is explained by this procedure substantially. I think we're looking at 6 figures, over 100,000 people easily.